Welcome to our lunchtime date together with me, John Ballam. I am an organizational development consultant, I'm an educator, and I'm a coach with a passion for lifelong learning. With me today is my partner in crime, Gifty.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gifty Parker, HR professional with a background in learning and development, performance management, as well as talent management.
So for the next 20 minutes, we invite you to sit back, find a glass of something nice, and enjoy an unusual conversation with us.
All right, John, good morning. Actually, it is afternoon now.
It is afternoon.
Time flies so quickly.
It does. When you're friends.
Oh, yes, when you're with friends. I agree. Uh-huh. I am Gifty Parker. I am opportune to be here today with John Ballon, a very, very great friend, great mentor. And we're enjoying the outdoors today, aren't we?
Yeah, we're on the banks of the Sumas River here. There'll be a bit of background noise, I guess, as we talk. But we want you to feel like you're here with us wherever we are and wherever we podcast from, just having a conversation about things that matter to us. So, Gifty, your background, I mean, people will be interested to know, where did you come from? Why did you get into this? What you're doing?
Absolutely. Well, my background is one that I'm very proud of because I find it to be very unique and not one that is planned exactly. Uh-huh. Background in human resources. I actually moved to Canada in 2015 after living in the United Arab Emirates for 10 years. While I was there, I had the opportunity to travel all around the world, work with different people from different backgrounds. But when it comes to my professional background, that's in human resources. Everything from recruitment to training to performance management. So I'm very proud of my 20 plus years of actually doing consulting. So that's been quite exciting for me.
Right. So I'm going to ask you.
We are go.
Okay. So, Gifty, you know, it's obvious by our accents that we are not native Canadians, right?
Right.
And I think it's really important that people get the context of where we've come from and why we do what we do. So one of the things I think people be curious about is that I know that you have moved through many different organizations, but particularly cultures, right? And that's this cultural understanding of yours is a very rich one. And I've really appreciated working with it over the years. So maybe tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, your roots and your origins and how that's affected the person you are, or made you the person you are as you've worked with that.
Yeah, thank you, John. Thank you. Actually, I've been very fortunate living in Africa at a very early age. The first country I went to was Malta, a very small island very close to Italy. Went there for vacation, loved it, stayed there, and from there, I started exploring. I've always wanted to learn, so I always registered in international university. I moved to Dubai to work as a cabin crew for Emirates Airlines, and I remember being there for 10 years and traveling all around the world. Mm-hmm. So going to different destinations, being there live, understanding their culture, people in their own environment. Mm-hmm. And I started drawing the connection, started understanding the differences, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of perception, in terms of the way people deal with mm-hmm. things, beliefs. Mm-hmm. And that not only kind of made me aware, mm-hmm. but it made me a little bit more understanding.
When
I interact with people, I'm always quite curious to understand when they make a statement or the way they think, where is that from, or the way they interact mm-hmm. or do not interact. And that has actually shaped who I am today.
Because you've been on the outside, right? When you come to a new culture, you're the outsider. So you think how, so that empathy,
And that kind of, it's changed who I am in terms of my dealing with people, mm-hmm. working with people. Mm-hmm. And I find that it actually fosters my ability to connect with people. So I can, when I meet someone, mm-hmm. it's always very interesting. You know, I get along very quickly with mm-hmm. them. And I feel mm-hmm. it has to do with that opportunity that I had, mm-hmm. you know, traveling around the world and, of course, found Canada to be the home.
Right.
And that's correct. I remember working with you first at a college. Mm-hmm. I remember you walking in and I was like, oh my God, look at this gentleman. I was trying very hard to figure out where you were from before you spoke. But then you spoke. Uh-huh. And I was like, this philosophical man. And I could tell actually right away your background was South Africa, but I was fascinated with the way you spoke, the way you thought, mm-hmm. you know, the way you connect with people, and when you made statements, it kind of make me think. I remember emails, you always put a quote at the end of your emails. Where did this philosophical background come from? So I'm sure our listeners would like to, you know, learn a little bit about that.
Yeah. It's like all of life, you know, part of it is what happened to us and then what we made of what happened to us, right? Mm. So my roots are in actually what was then British Rhodesia, then became Ian Smith's Rhodesia. And then I moved when I was 19 to South Africa and then most recently to Canada. But if we go back to my childhood roots, you know, I grew up in the decolonialization of Africa, and I happened to be one of those colonials, and socialized into a very kind of deep racism, with all that went with it. Yeah, and I also went to these boys' private boarding schools. You know, because young men had to go to boarding school; that was the thought of the day.
Seriously?
So you know, like, and these were very hyper British, because you know, when they become the colonies, become even more than the empire itself. So I grew up. In a sense, with a lot of this conflict, because as I began to mature psychologically, my home wasn't happy. I was an outsider in Africa. I had African friends, and there was this whole thing of was I trusted, you know? And then, you know, we had this terrible saying in Africa where you used to call the African people used to mock other Africans and tell them they were coconuts, which means they were black on the outside but white inside.
Right?
Yeah, but you know, my African friends just say to me, no, actually, John, you're a reverse coconut, because you're white on the outside, black inside.
reverse coconut.
Yeah, because all that background, and then I was also, you know. I had two learning disabilities, and also I was one of those sensitive men. So like, for example, I hated rugby. You know, I was a cultural guy because I couldn't see the point of running with this leather ball with these gorillas chasing you and about to grind you into the ground, and they called that fun. You know, so there was, I was outside of my peer group. I was an outsider, and I was a bit strange and different to them. And I guess then when you're on the outside, and you start asking questions, and you turn inwards, right? And I began to become interested in initially spirituality, which was Christian spirituality, and then moved on to other things. And then I began reading philosophy. And then I began realizing, you know, we have an external map of the world, like our geography, but we also have a map of the world of how we see the world, a perceptual map of the world. But that is generated from within us. And so what we're looking through is what we're looking at. And I began to realize quite young in life that maybe there were multiple lenses. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe life was like a good optometrist. You know, my aim in life was to try and see. And that's, I think, one of the things that's connected to us. We both enjoy this multi-perspective view of the world. Because it makes it really interesting. Right?
It does. It does. And it enriches the way we see things. Because I always say to colleagues and students, your perpetual process, it's influenced hugely by your values, your beliefs, your internal thinking, your ability to connect internal.
Yes.
You know, and reflect.
Yes.
It plays a big role.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so you know, this is... early church fathers, as Catholics talk about a lot. Thomas Aquinas, he used this phrase. He said, "You know, we must become self-possessed and self-directed." You know, I love that. You know, that self-possession, self-direction doesn't mean we gotta hold ourselves tightly, but it means that we can own our frame of reference frames of reference.
I agree.
And
I
take
agree.
Responsibility for
yes,
those.
Yeah.
Okay, so Gifty, you know, careers, as we know, come with obstacles. None of us got to where we are because we didn't climb a few mountains and fall out of a few trees sometimes to actually attain our goals. So what were some of the external obstacles in your environment you had to overcome to become successful? And how did you do this? And tell us some real life experience you had.
Yeah, absolutely, John. Thank you so much. That's a great question. I think we can all relate to having to, you know, face obstacles in our career at one stage or the other. And love a question because I believe a lot of our listeners will be able to relate to some of the things that we can share today. I think in my own case, I have to reflect back and see which one would be most interesting for our listeners, because I happen to, you know, work most of my career actually happened in the United Arab Emirates and then before coming here to Canada. So I could just maybe draw on one from that particular context and another from Canada. Great. I think for the United Arab Emirates, it was just the beginning of my career. Beginning of my career didn't mean that I was very young. It was someone who was, you know, in the later stage of their youth and trying to, you know, start a career. So a lot of people were already searching what they wanted to do, but that was the point where I was actually self-discovering, learning a little bit about what is it that I really wanted to do. So then I was doing what is equivalent to a master's, but because of my background, it was a pre-MBA program. And I remember taking a course on human resources. It was an elective back then.
Okay. So tell us a little about the background to the studies, how you came to do those studies, because this is all very relevant, you know, how we choose study.
Do you know what you want to go for? Absolutely. John, you're into stories today.
No, okay. That's important. It's really important.
Well, I think it is actually a good question. I agree with you because we always kind of talk about it as if it was very easy to say, okay, this is the course I want to take. And we forget, you know, we do forget that it was not an easy journey. So I think for me, yes, it wasn't an easy journey. I spent quite a lot of time trying to understand what it is that I enjoyed. And when I say a lot of time, I'm going to roll back a little bit. Before arriving in the United Arab Emirates, I did 2 years of law. I realized I'm not really looking to be in this particular line of work. And then I did 2 years of business administration. Same thing. I wasn't quite. I didn't find the fit. I didn't find the interest. And then I did 2 years in linguistics, and I didn't find the interest as well.
Wow.
So this was a time that, luckily for me, you had a way of moving and navigating where you don't really lose those 2 years. It's still part of learning, and it's still part of your journey through your bachelor degree. But at the end, when I came out, I had no focus because I actually went through three paths, different paths, and I still didn't know what I wanted. So doing that MBA was a requirement because I didn't have a focus with my bachelor. So they couldn't take me directly into an MBA program. So they needed me to do a pre-MBA to discover what it is that I wanted. So it was a discovery all along. And even with the MBA program, I wanted to ensure that my electives were different because I still didn't find that topic, that subject that I could relate to on a deeper level. So one of the electives was actually, I believe then, employee relations, and it's under HR. Again, looking at the textbook, it didn't really connect. It was nice to do the assignment, but I had a project, and my project was to actually interview people within that profession. And it was the first project for me. And I think that connection of being able to, I was fortunate to interview the back then was the VP of recruitment at Emirates Airlines. Her name is Alison Ward. I hope she's listening to this. And it was nice to connect with such a professional at that level, a woman in the United Arab Emirates within such a high profile role. So for me, that was, again, a connection thing. It kind of like, okay, this is great. And she told me about our role. She told me what she was doing. And that was beautiful for me. And I also had the opportunity to connect with the people within the departments because it was like, oh, she's doing that project. She's working out with our company. And people were very willing to allow me to interview them. My research was on performance management, the impact on people who were flying and working on ground as well. I can't remember the exact topic, but it was a good opportunity because speaking to those people was very easy for me to connect and relate to the job and see myself within the role. And that was how that connection came in. So we always say and emphasize that people should go for careers that they enjoy, careers that they connect with, because there is never that doubt. Even when you face, my topic is external obstacles, you still have that connection. You still have that desire. You still have that eagerness to want to create a difference and understand more of the path that you are in. But that also led to obstacles as well. So for me, external obstacles were around the context where I was working and studying. It was one where I was not fortunate to have family. I tell students today, learning is a community. Learn with those people that you're connected with, your parents, your friends. And I didn't have that. During my first master's was almost actually all online. It was the last bit that they invited us to the UK, but everything was online. I had a job that involved traveling all the time. I didn't have friends around there. Wow. There was no WhatsApp. There was no Skype. That was a big obstacle for somebody who was from Africa to find herself in a country like the United Arab Emirates, a new work culture, studying a master's, studying a degree. It was a big challenge for me. And today, I'm very happy to have been able to overcome that. And I believe I was able to overcome that just by, you know, tapping into the connections I have. Like, I fly with somebody, I want to learn a thing or two for them. I'm doing one assignment, I want to be able to find the opportunity to bring it into my workplace. And I look up to a lot of people within their roles, like the VP I interviewed, the people I spoke to. I ended up doing that job because they were able to give me time to speak to them. I ended up learning about the job and doing that job. So picking up things very fast helped me to overcome those challenges because I didn't have anybody who has gone through the same to say, oh, Gifty, you know what? This is the path you should take. So it was a lot of quick learning and taking that back into what I was doing. And so that was a big challenge for me, being in a different environment and being able to, you know, learn very quickly. And it was not easy. It was not easy. And I think being able to overcome that has a lot to do with the fact that I was doing and studying something that I enjoyed.
What you said there is so critical, you know, that your internal motivation was so strong. But the other thing you said, I also think is so critical too. You know, we're sometimes afraid to make ourselves vulnerable. And the fact that you could say, I need to reach out. I've got to find people. I've got to connect wherever I can to apply the learning, right? And if you just sat there as a victim and said, you know, I can't do it, you might have folded, you know, just that connection.
I agree. And John, that brings us back to the second context, Canada. So coming to Canada with all the experience, and I see a lot of international individuals, professionals who are here, and they ask the same question. Coming over here, I needed to continue that, you know, so building a new network was crucial. And that is from professional associations. I remember my first month at the association, I was like, I need to learn how I can do this more. So I was like, oh, why don't you volunteer? Yes. Volunteered, met people volunteering, learning from them. It's all about learning. We learn just by connecting with people. We learn just by reading. We learn also by doing. So those were things that I focused on a lot. So even for the fact that I was still studying here in Canada during my second master's, it was all about learning. It was all about people. I was curious to learn about you. I was curious to learn about what you were doing. And I was comfortable dedicating my time to volunteering because that helped me to, you know, go into and broaden my connection. People love it when you want to volunteer. They want to learn about you. They want to know you. And that was good as well. So that was a big sort of an obstacle coming into a new country and starting all over. Overcoming that, your network that you build and building a network costs you nothing. You know, it doesn't cost you anything. So I had an email to people on LinkedIn. I volunteered at the association. I went for workshops, and that really helped.
You know, one of the things that struck me, when I met you at Gastown Business College, how long have you been in Canada?
Oh, actually, I think that was 3 months in Vancouver, but a year in Canada.
Okay. So I tell you what struck me about this meeting with you was you came initially to apply for the receptionist position, right?
Yes.
And you know what is amazing for me is that with all your qualifications and all your experience, you would say, I'll take this humble job if that's a job I can get and it's going to take me the next step. And I remember then you were catapulted immediately from receptionist, which you never did, to teacher,
right? I never did it.
But if you hadn't taken that step, you would have never been that teacher, right?
You would never been that. And actually, that's very true.
Wow.
Yeah. I never even remember that story. I went for an interview on a Friday for a receptionist job.
That's
and
right.
I started on a Monday as an instructor.
I remember the director of the college coming to me and saying, this person applied for that, but she's going to be a fantastic teacher. And she's got all these credentials which we need at this college. Gifty, it's an amazing story.
You know what? There's so much history, John, so much history. I'm happy that we're able to, you know, peel them layer after layer.
Because you see, one of the things I think often is if we mine our experience, people say, what matures your experience? It's not experience, it's learning from experience. And everybody's got a rich experience, and we just mine that experience. And then we gain insight into ourselves. We think, I actually did. That's what I did. But until we mine that experience, it's just, you know, it's just stuff.
I agree.
Yeah, amazing.
I do have another question for you, John, and this one I'm actually interested in it. So this will be, what do you know in terms of your career? So we've kind of talked a little bit about, I think the first question I asked about a significant mentor. So I think our audience would like to know, what do you do right now?
Okay, right now. So right now I'm a coach and a particular type of coach. Okay. It's called integral coaching. And then I also do organizational development. And it's interesting how this has all come about, really, because I started out my career as a teacher and as an educator, and I still regard myself as an educator. I still love seeing people learn. You know, I'm kind of addicted to the aha experience. You know, when I see somebody understand something, I get this like, whoop, inside of me. Electricity runs through me. And I mean, when I say understand, not just facts, but obviously the deeper understanding of life. And I also, as an educator, realized quite quickly in my career that the emotional stability, you know, of somebody is critical to the learning. So I always say your EQ, your emotional intelligence, determines your IQ. And it's not the other way around. You know, so if you are emotionally stable and you feel secure with another human being, then you can really start learning. Or you're secure emotionally in a community, then learning can really begin to happen. So part of my job as a coach, what I do at the moment, is I put a lot of emphasis on saying, well, my client's whole life matters, right? And their emotional, how they feel about their life really matters, not just what they are doing. Now, obviously, I'm not a therapist, and I can refer them to therapists if they need to go there. But essentially, there's what, you know, in coaching, what I call upstairs and downstairs work. So downstairs work is what's running beneath the surface of your life other than your executive functioning. In other words, you know, what's popping up in your dreams, what you're worrying about. So, for example, a past career failure can really haunt somebody, and they need to just be able to talk about it, say, look, this happened in my career. Because we all screwed up in our career somewhere along the line. We all did make terrible blunders somewhere along the line. And if people tell me they had never made these blunders, they're lying. Okay, so these moments of shame and all sorts of baggage we carry downstairs, we don't expose it to people, right? So the coaching, I want to deal with the downstairs work. And then there's the upstairs work, like how to plan properly, how to get your day organized and all that stuff. So we need a combination when we're coached. And that's what I do, of upstairs and downstairs work. And then finally, in terms of my coaching, there's another part of what I do is when we coach, sometimes people think you've just got to say to somebody, okay, plan well, work harder. Willpower alone is not enough, okay? Willpower alone doesn't change everything. So sometimes there's a skill set that you've got to learn that supports that development. right? Okay, you've got to take a look at it. Or there's deeper issues that you need to take a look at, and skills. Sometimes I will pull in other experts to help so you can deal with that, those issues, right? So there are skills behind the skill that you are trying to acquire, or insights behind the insight you're trying to acquire. And that's what fascinates me, because the kind of old style military, just, you know, work harder, get going, you know, all that stuff. If you haven't got that supportive structure behind you, you can't do those things. You fake it till you make it. It's just bad advice sometimes. Yeah. So that's what would be my coaching, is looking at the deeper skill sets that run behind the skill or the approach to life one is trying to acquire. So that's the one side of what I do. The other side of what I do is actually just an extension of that. It's organizational development. So organizational development, in loose terms, is coaching the organizational structure. So how is the organization structured? What drives the organizational culture? How does your culture align with your vision and mission? And how do the teams of people, groups of people, understand or not understand each other in those organizations? So I'll give you an example from education, although there are many of these what I call tribal examples. Typically in educational institutes, there's this huge gap between teachers and administration. You know, teachers see themselves as like the elite, you know, the stormtroopers here. And then there's the people who do grunt work, you know, on the reception stuff. And neither is more important than the other, because without either, your wheels fall off in an educational institution. But there are very different types or psyches that run in those domains. Now, teachers are performers. They go up, they go down. They're very intense. They like this intense emotional experience. You don't want administrators like that. You want administrators that are cool cucumbers, man. They're just like relaxed, chilled, you know, process orientated, detail focused, you know, not theatrical. Okay? But of course, the administrators look at the teachers and say, well, you know, you narcissistic, you know, egomaniacs up there. And the teachers look down, the administrators say, you cold lizards, you know, all you do is crunch Excel spreadsheets. Now, in organizations, in many of these divisions, marketing and accounting, you know, fight with each other all the time. So organizational development means getting these tribes to understand each other. And I specialize in that. I think it's very, very important in a business that we deeply respect each other and understand where we come from. And that my skill is my skill, but it doesn't make me any more special than you. You have your skill set, which I deeply honor and respect, because I can't do that. So that's
very interesting. Yeah, very interesting. You know, when you talk about coaching, and now I really want to learn by asking you this question. I've met quite a few people who are in specific aspects of coaching, and it's nice to know what your focus is. I love the idea of having people to understand the skills behind the skills, you know, because there are all the motivators behind everything that we have or do. How would you describe, you know, for myself, you know, our listeners, your own style of coaching, or let me put it this way, your philosophy, your coaching philosophy? How would that be? What distinguishes your way of coaching from others?
Okay, so I don't want to sound, when we asked to distinguish myself, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm the only one that does this, because there are probably other very good, lots of other good people that do this as well. Okay. So firstly, what I've taken quite a deep journey through my own life. I've probably 8 different therapists that I've worked with. And so I have, I would say, a fairly deep level of self-understanding. Okay. And it's my style would be to understand the individual as holistically as I can first. So that means not just what's going on inside of them, but who they're connected to. What web of relationships are they woven into? Because that web that they're woven into, their family, their relatives, they all matters, right? It all affects that human being in some way or other. Your home and whatever, to their children, to understand that context. I look for a deep contextual understanding of the individual. Then I look for a particular alignment between three things, okay? And that is, in terms of their career, what their values are, what they like doing, what they're interested in doing, and what they're competent to do. Because we can like some things very much. Our values can align, but actually we haven't got the skills. Now, we either got to acquire those skills, or maybe we just cannot find those skills. So I knew somebody, for example, he loves jazz music. This person just adores jazz music, and he's very interested in jazz music, okay? And has all the values that go with being a jazz musician. But this person suffers, would have suffered, but just does not have the dexterity to play jazz guitar with his fingers, okay? Because you need a certain level of dexterity, okay? So no matter how much, and this person went out to study, and it wasn't me, by the way, but this person went out to study jazz guitar and then had to actually say, no, this is not for me because I can only reach a certain level. And beyond that, okay? So we've got to become realistic about where that skill's limitations lie. Or I use myself as this example. I'm good at conflict resolution, right? I can do it. People are very happy when I do it. It aligns with my values. It aligns with my skills, but it does not align with my interests because it gets inside of me and disturbs me, and I don't sleep well at night after I've resolved a big conflict, you know? So I've done big corporate conflicts and individual conflicts, and I still do it for friends and, you know, if I really think it's absolutely critical, but otherwise I'll outsource it.
We always have to know where we can bring in.
Yeah. So for me, interest, values, and skills to look for an individual and for them to become honest about those bandwidths. Okay. So what's the bandwidth of this interest? I'm very interested in fishing. I love fishing. I get great delight in all the values. But if you said to me, become a professional fisherman, the answer is no, because I'm just not skilled. I know other people that are professional fishermen. I know one guy that could take a fly line and cast it into a teacup, 35 meters, you know, that kind of stuff.
Okay. I think that's easy, though, for, you know, I've actually met people who have passion for like a great deal of interest in a topic or in an area, but you don't have the skill and find it difficult to actually develop or acquire the skills to actually be able to pursue that. And through your experience, is it easy to coach such people to get them to be in that mindset to realize that there's a gap?
It depends on how much is at stake. And what also depends with people is their present circumstances is how much emotional bandwidth they've got. So when I'm coaching somebody, if they're going through, for example, a divorce or something really big has just happened to them emotionally, we're all like this. We just don't have a lot of stretch in our personalities, right? So it would be counterproductive for me to kind of whip them and say, you've got to do this and push them too hard because they're just going to hit the wall. Okay? So it's to assess their level of emotional bandwidth and present bandwidth, and also then to assess what boogeymen are in their, what I call their cellar or their back cupboard, you know? So some people have these want to do this, but they've been blunted or hurt in their past. You know, and I might send them to a therapist, don't pick that knot. So they have this internal resistance when they try this because they just, you know, somebody made them feel ashamed or whatever, and they've got to overcome that. So coaching, unfortunately, like consultancy, you know, it's got this bad reputation sometimes because people say all you need is a business card. You print a business card, you qualify as a coach.
Until next time, this is Gifty Parker and John Ballen.
Remember, during your busy week ahead, stay good, stay true, and stay beautiful.
Bye-bye.